The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
We are back on the Hugh Hewitt radio program with a Christmas classic by the Runaways. Now, you may be asking, first of all, who is this lunatic? It's Kurt Schlichter. I'm the guest host. Retired Army colonel, no trial lawyer, senior columnist at Town Hall. Second, you're asking, is Cherry Bomb by the Runaways a Christmas song? You bet it is. And your Christmas present here under the tree is my friend from American greatness, Liz Schell. Good morning, Liz.
Good morning, Kurt. Thanks for having me on this morning.
Are you feeling Christmas-orific?
I am. I wish we had like a break from the news, but we're not going to ever have that.
Well,
again, so.
The news delivered us a couple little presents tomorrow, and I want to discuss them with it. The first present is one that Joe Manchin left under Chuck Schumer's tree, which is much like what happens when my dog leaves under the tree when I don't let her out for 8 hours. BBB is no.
Yeah, I don't know how the Democrats did not predict this happening, because at the end of the day, people like Joe Manchin, senators like Joe Manchin, and also Kristen Sinema, who really are in purple or red states, they're not going to sign on to this wackadoodle garbage. They're just not. They don't have the votes. So it's not clear why they would, the Democrats and Schumer would push this out there like it's a big flagship piece of legislation when they know it has no chance of passing.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Manchin has not exactly been reticent about saying, I'm not going to vote for this. And Chuck Schumer's like, yeah, you are. And I said, no, I'm not. And Joe Biden's like, where's my mush? And he's like, I'm still not going to vote for it. Does he go independent, Joe Manchin?
You know, a lot of people say this. A lot of people, I think there's been rumors over the years that Manchin's going to turn, he's going to go independent, or he's going to join the GOP. But also remember, Joe Manchin has never, this is really the first time that Manchin has stuck his neck out. He always ends up caving. Remember, Joe Manchin voted to impeach Trump. And in a state, I believe that Trump was most popular in West Virginia of all the states, and yet Manchin still voted to impeach Trump. So really, on the tough issues, Manchin doesn't stay strong. So I really don't think he's going to switch. I think it's more likely he will not get reelected.
Well, Liz Schell, I think I don't think he has any choice. I mean, if he voted for impeachment, if he also votes for BBB, which is about as popular in West Virginia as toe fungus.
Yeah.
he's kaput. Yeah, now, he could triangulate. He could go, I'm independent. I don't think Mitch right now wants him to actually come over, because suddenly the Republicans have a majority and people look at him and expect him to do something. I think Mitch is perfectly happy to run out the next 11 months until next November and let the Democrats under Chuck Schumer, who's absolutely, he is as incompetent as Mitch is tactically proficient. He just let him run in circles.
No, I think you're right. But I would argue that it's not just 11 months. I mean, Mitch McConnell and the establishment Republicans are happy to be in the minority forever. They like not having any responsibility. I mean, they still get to wear their little Senate pins on their lapels and parade around like they're important people without having any responsibility and being able to say, hey, look, we can't do anything. We're in the minority. They love that. I mean, it doesn't affect them. So it just affects the people that they claim to represent. So, but I do agree. I don't think McConnell's wooing Manchin. I don't think he's pitching woo and offering benefits and
pitching
promises.
Woo.
Come on over so we can take over and, stop Biden and put our stuff out there. No, I don't think that's it at all. Absolutely not.
Dwayne just mentioned that Pitching Wu was one of Swalwell's girlfriends.
Oh.
Are you going to drop 23 Skidoo next? Is this old timey day with Liz Schell?
I'm an old soul.
Yeah, well, after I'm done here, I'm going to go out to the gym and list some of those triangular weights with my mustachioed trainer who shouts slogans at me. Anywho, here's the other Christmas present we have, Liz Schell. One that I'm not sure I want to open. In the last 48 hours, there's been a Hillary Clinton 2024 boomlet. What say you about the prospect of, return of the living dead?
Okay, so honestly, if the Democrats want to run this, like, dried up old puff bag, go for it. Go for it. Is she viable? Absolutely not. People are sick of her. This will be the third time that she's tried to run for president. She lost the first time to someone nobody knew. No, first she lost to somebody nobody had ever heard of, right? Nobody knew who Barack Obama was when he ran for president in 2008. She lost to him, and then she lost to Donald Trump. So what? Why would anyone think that this is the ticket to victory?
Yeah, exactly. Liz Schell, I like Donald Trump. I support him. So I wrote a book about people lying about him. I love the way he earned my support because he said things that I agreed with, and then he kept his word. But he's also Donald Trump. So America had a choice between this woman who'd been around politics for like 30 years and she'd been in the White House and everyone was telling her she's the smartest person in the world and Donald Trump. And America was like, you know, there's a better choice.
It's Donald Trump.
It'll be Donald Trump.
Well, and remember, but it's the Democrats' own characterization of Donald Trump, like he's a stupid, dumb carnival barker. He's this animal. He's a barbarian. And she lost to that.
Exactly.
He was a reality show host. I mean, they denigrated Trump. They talked to him like he's stupid. And he's not a dumb man.
No, he is not a dumb man.
She lost to that. So I think it's a really sad day that the Democrats don't have a bench. I mean, they've got Kamala. She's less popular than Biden, who's fairly unpopular.
Well, I mean, Kamala. I mean,
now they're going to resurrect Hillary Clinton?
Yeah, where's the Kamala mania? Look, the New York Times today apparently came out. I don't read the New York Times because I'm an American. But the New York Times apparently came out with an op-ed today that said, Joe Biden shouldn't run. I assume the explanation was because he's achieved all he set out to.
Well, I think the real explanation is that he will lose.
Oh, God.
He's been a terrible failure. He's promised things during the campaign that he can't deliver. And we've had more people die from COVID under Biden than we did under Trump.
Blood on his hands.
And he was going to, stop the virus. He was going to lock down the virus, but not the country, or some pithy slogan like that. The economy is in shambles. We've looking at something like 20% interest. 20% increase on food.
Liz, I went out to Carl's Jr., where I began my fantastic career mopping out toilets at the Carl's Jr. in Foster City, California, for $3.10 an hour. I got a nuggets meal. And I got a burger meal, and I got another burger, and it cost me $30.
I was going to say, was it like $50?
It was like $30.
You hand over the bills, and
it's like I have to break into my IRA to get a famous star.
Yeah, I mean, Biden has been a disaster, and on top of the inflation and the continuing spread and deaths of coronavirus, we have the disastrous Afghanistan withdrawal, which is humiliating for America in front of the public. I think that the plan was to create an image of Biden that was palatable to the public so that he was not Donald Trump. It didn't matter anything else. He was just not Donald Trump, and he just needed to be normal. Plus, we had the pandemic, so he could hide in the basement and not make all those gaffes that he makes almost every time he opens his mouth.
Oh, the
but
guy's
now,
a freak.
People have had a taste, right? People have had a taste of what a non-Donald Trump, a non-Trump administration looks like. And again, before the pandemic, our economy was the best in 50 years. It was booming. There were employment was very low. There's so many jobs. Everything is great. And now we have Biden, and it's like we're in austerity, and they're saying things like maybe you don't need a turkey for Thanksgiving.
Well, it's like they're all characters out of some Ayn Rand novel, where it's all the looters and the wreckers are doing it. Did you see Jen Psaki? She's like, you know, beef prices are up because of big meat.
Yeah, I don't think that's why beef prices are up.
Yeah.
You know, there's a disconnect. I think the media is able to brainwash people or portray an image about things that are positive when people don't know the details, when they're distant. You can't tell people their grocery bill hasn't jumped up 20% to 30%.
Well, you can try.
Looking to buy a house that the houses are going off the market in an hour. You can't keep telling people things that they are intimately familiar with and pretend that they're not happening. So good luck with that, Jen Psaki. The big problem the Democrats have is they have no bench. They have no up-and-comers.
Well, Buttigieg? What about Buttigieg-a-mania?
I don't think that's actually...
the king of South Bend.
Yeah, but then he ran for president and didn't do very well. I mean, thud, you know, against this old cornball Biden. Buttigieg is young. He's very articulate. I think he's a very good politician. He's great with retail politics. You know, he's articulate, friendly, somewhat relatable. And yet he couldn't really pull out a victory. He couldn't even pull out a veep slot under Biden.
He'd be head of the Department of Transportation, and we all see how well that's going. Liz Sheld, we've got about 30 seconds left. What do you see coming over the next year? How do you think we're going to do in 11?
I think it's going to get worse.
Oh,
I
love your hopefulness. All right. That's Liz Sheld of American Greatness. Read everything she writes. Stick around here on the Hugh Hewitt radio program. We have Special Forces guy Jim Hansen coming up.
Brought to you by ReliefFactor.com. $19.95 gets you started on ReliefFactor.com. I talk about it three times in my daily show. At the bottom of the first hour when I take it, and then in hours two and three when I remind you to take it, depending on when your commute begins, because ReliefFactor.com works. It's the only supplement I've taken in 30 years of broadcasting. I've declined every other opportunity to take a supplement, and I'll tell you why. Because ReliefFactor.com actually works. I carry in Curcumin and Resveratrol Omega, temporary relief for the relief of minor aches and pains, temporary support for the relief of minor aches and pains, and you can't do better than that 3-week starter pack, $19.95.
We are back on the Hugh Hewitt radio program. I am guest host Kurt Schlichter. That is the Dropkick Murphys. So we're getting a little Boston action going because they're Irish-ish. I want to welcome someone to our planet. Just last night, Chechnya Bojana Fitzgerald arrived from my friend Sergeant Fitz on Twitter. Young lady is here and a warrior for freedom in about 18, 20 years. By the way, Bojana is Slovenian for warrior. I think it's important that we are fruitful and multiply, because I think that we are going to outbreed our barren leftist enemies. So conservatives, young ones, fertile ones, fecund ones, get out there. Get out there and bring some new conservative kids into the world. Speaking of kids, well, I'm not speaking of kids at all. I'm speaking of my friend Jim Hansen from a security studies group. Jim, how are you doing at Oh Dark 30?
This is the perfect time to talk about anything you want to talk about, Kurt.
Well, so I say, look, I got to get Green Beret Jim Hansen in here, talk about some military stuff. Jim, will you come on the show? He goes, yeah, fine. By the way, I'm in California. I'm like, great. I'm going to put you in the first hour. So you're
hey,
welcome.
You're up, I'm up, brother.
Now, I've got to ask you, Jim. Now, We are both Army veterans. We both look at the Navy as a necessary evil. But I'm a little confused because I thought even sailors knew the difference between boys and girls. But apparently there is an admiral up for being nominated. I think he's a vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who thinks that what the Navy now requires is gender advisors. Have you are you aware of this turn of events?
Yeah, it unfortunately tracks with the entire, I guess, bent of the military these days towards being more involved in flying the pride flag than in flying the American flag. And I don't know that it's really doing us a whole lot of good in the main mission of the military, which is deter our enemies from trying anything bad. At this point, I don't think they have a whole lot of fear or, you know, any kind of concern about our military coming. And that's a bad sign for the entire world.
I think it's a very bad sign, Jim Hansen. You know, not too long ago, down in San Diego, the Bonhomme Richard caught fire. Now, I'm not a sailor. You're not a sailor. But I think we can agree that fires on a big metal boat full of jet fuel and ammunition, probably something you want to be trained and prepared to battle. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, I don't know. Not if you have the difficult task of ensuring that everyone on the boat's pronouns are properly maintained and ready for battle. So I think, you know, they had their priorities where they need to be in the modern age. I mean, they also had a submarine that ran into an undersea mountain. Now, I don't know about you, but I was under the impression that we planned and trained and made those boats capable of not running into undersea mountains or anything else while they were doing their duty. But apparently those things, again, have come second to the necessity for a woke military. And I don't think that is, again, going to serve anybody's purpose.
Well, Jim Hansen, we know from the investigation of the Richard fire that they had not done their firefighting training, that it hadn't been completed. What percentage chance do you think that every member of that crew had not completed his, her, or their trans awareness training?
Now, I was informed when you told me I was going to be doing this, there would be no math. But I'm going to go with there is either a 0 or 100% chance based on whether or not I correctly understood what you're asking. Of course they had their trans training, and that's why they didn't get their firefighting training. I've heard from so many people who are serving now that they spend more time on these woke issues and woke training than they do on their actual battle readiness, combat readiness, and other things. And I think that's something that we're going to have to ensure that we bring in a Congress and then a new chief executive to be commander in chief that changes all of that. And I think that needs to be a major priority, because otherwise we've got a military that is not up to the task.
Well, Jim Hansen, I was a company commander a couple times, a battalion commander, acting brigade commander. You were a first sergeant, the senior non-commissioned officer in an infantry company. Would you agree that it is fair to say that soldiers do what commanders and first sergeants check?
And that's 100% the problem, because right now, if anyone wants to get promoted in today's military, the priorities are all about political correctness, and they are not about the pointy end of the spear. And I don't know any way to tell the audience the danger of that other than please help us fix it.
Jim Hansen, Security Studies Group, thank you very much for getting up at O'Dark 30. Stick around. We got two more hours of the Hugh Hewitt radio program to come.
Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt. If you're buying gold, do it from Birch Gold. You can find Birch Gold at HughGold.com. I'm glad that they're sponsoring the podcast, but more importantly, I'm glad you're looking and making sure that your investment portfolio is diversified. Wealth is made in concentration and preserved in diversification, and you should diversify a part of your portfolio, 5 to 10% in gold. You can do that by rolling over a portion of your IRA or 401k into a gold and silver and other precious metals depository maintained by Birch Gold. Or you can just buy gold and put it in your safety deposit box. Either way, do it from Birch Gold, which you can find at HughGold.com, or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. That's HughGold.com, or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. Now enjoy this podcast. So I'll let him tell you all about it. Take it away, Colonel Kurt.
Thank you, Hugh Hewitt, for that disgraceful slander of my character. Who the hell am I? Well, I'm a senior columnist at townhall.com. I'm also a noted Los Angeles trial lawyer, a retired United States Army colonel, and the author of the Kelly Turnbull series of conservative action novels, which make the perfect present for the conservative in your life that you love and the liberal that you want to annoy. I'm getting right to it because we have a great guest who is packed with insight and information. He is a favorite when I'm a guest host, despite being associated with the United States Navy, which is an important supporting arm of the military, helping the decisive branch of the military, the United States Army, to achieve its countless victories. Senator Rick Scott of the great free state of Florida. Senator Scott, welcome to the Hugh Hewitt radio program.
What happened with that football game? Did you see there was a football game last Saturday?
I'm officer candidate school. The only thing I care less about, Senator Scott, than what happened in that football game is what the people at the Bulwark think.
I'm very appreciative of the Army. My father did all the combat jumps as a member of the 82nd Airborne.
Hoo-ah!
The Second World War. He told me how great the food and the foxholes were, so I joined the Navy.
A wise man. I went the opposite way. My grandfathers and father were Navy. I naturally became the green sheep of the family. But Senator Scott, let's get into the next battle that you're facing. You are the point man for retaking the United States Senate in 2022. Overall, are you optimistic?
Oh, very optimistic. Here's why we're going to win. One, we have great candidates running, and there was more people getting to the race. Number two, Joe Biden's support is crumbling. Number three, his agenda has crumbled. Number four, the Democrats have primaries with far-left candidates in North Carolina, in Pennsylvania, in Ohio, in Wisconsin, all states that I absolutely believe we will win. There was going to be some tough races, but we're going to get a majority, and I think we could. If all of our candidates do well, we could have a nice majority in the Senate next November.
Well, Senator Scott, now, candidate selection is key. Chris Sununu, the governor in New Hampshire, has said he's not going to run for the Senate seat, I believe held by Maggie Hassan. Who do we have as candidates there? How do you go about filling a void when the elephant in the room says, nah?
Well, first off, if you want to be a Republican senator from New Hampshire, this is the year you want to run. Maggie Hassan is up. Maggie Hassan is way underwater on her fave unfave. The Biden agenda is not popular. So we already have General Don Bolduc in the race, and we've got like five other people looking at the race. We're going to have at least one, maybe two more people get into the race. I know the state senate president is looking at the race. There's a variety of people looking. There's some business people looking at the race. We will have a good candidate come out of there, and we will win. You're right. Kirsten Newton's not going to run. Kelly Ayotte's not going to run. But there's a lot of great people in New Hampshire, and we are going to win New Hampshire.
Well, Senator Scott, as the point man for the Republican senatorial races, it's not your job to pick winners and losers in the primary. You want to recruit good candidates. What happens? Look, I can say it. There are some candidates out there I'm worried about. What do you do when there is a candidate that, you kind of know he's got some flaws and maybe he's putting a sure win at risk? What do you do?
Well, first off, I really do believe the voters are going to choose well. When I got into my primary against the sitting attorney general, a guy who'd been in Congress for 22 years, that every Republican in the country endorsed. The only Republicans that talked to me in the primary were the ones that told me to get out. But the people of Florida made a decision. They said they wanted a business guy to be their governor at the time. And I was able to win. I was able to win the primary. I think that's what's going to happen here. The only person that people have real concerns that he might not be able to win is the general who's one of the candidates in Missouri. But I believe Missouri, like the other states, we're going to have good primaries where people are going to have to talk about the issues, and the right person will come out, and we'll have wins. We'll win Missouri. We're going to win Alabama. We got primaries there. We got primaries in North Carolina on our side, Ohio. But we're going to have good candidates. Pennsylvania, more people are getting into the Pennsylvania race, which, you know, for the people in there probably don't like it. But from my standpoint, we're going to have a great person come out of each of these races.
Well, Senator Scott, look, I know Hugh Hewitt is, and I am deeply concerned about the Eric Greitens in Missouri. Obviously, you recognize that there are concerns out there, though it doesn't appear that you're going to take a position, which is probably the right thing for you to do in your position. Is there a point where the Senate Republicans intervene and say, hey, we got to have an intervention here. This guy is just going to bring us down.
I think that what you're going to see is one of the other candidates is going to win. I think that you can already see it. I mean, Eric Schmidt,
great guy,
yeah, Billy Long. I don't know Mark McCluskey. I know the others, but one of those will win the primary. We also have the state senate president in the race, Dave Schatz. I haven't met him yet. But we're going to have a great person to come out of that race, and Missouri is going to be a state that we're going to win. It's a Republican state. I think Trump won by what, 16 points or something. So, they don't even have a candidate. Claire McCaskill admitted that Missouri's not a swing state anymore. Missouri's a Republican state. So I believe we'll have a good candidate come out of there, and we'll win.
Senator Rick Scott, we had some fun talking about our respective services. And I will say this about our friends in the Navy. I always thought they could tell the difference between boys and girls. But there is an admiral up being considered for elevation to being vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff who believes that the Navy needs gender advisors. What is going on with this? This is madness.
Oh, I didn't see that. He testified in Armed Services the other day, and that never came up. I did. Here's what I believe. I believe I have daughters. I know my daughters can be anything they want to be. I believe women in this country can be anything they want to be. What we should do is say we want the best person for every job, period. I mean, and the military should be completely based on talent. And whoever the best person is, that's who ought to have these jobs, because I want the most lethal force in the world. I want Russia, Communist China, Iran, Cuba. I want them to shake in their boots when they think, oh gosh, the U.S. military is going to show up. We better, we don't want to do anything that would ever get them to show up on our shores.
Well, Senator Scott, I am concerned that China is not quaking in its boots. They are building ships faster than us. They are not ramming their ships into other ships or undersea mountains. They are not unable to fight fires on burning ships in docks, which, again, I'm an Army guy, but I would believe that, firefighting on a vessel full of ammunition and jet fuel is probably pretty important. And I'm pretty sure that every one of those sailors who didn't know how to fight fires effectively had completed his trans awareness training. And I don't want to pick on the Navy because the Army's broken too.
Yeah, I didn't have any of that when I was in. I went to firefighting school. I went to damage control school. I enlisted when I was 18 years old. We went to all those schools. We didn't. They didn't come and say, "Oh, you got to have the right feelings and things like that." They said, "No, you better the hell do your job, and this is your responsibility." One of my responsibilities: what happens if a helicopter crashes at the back of the ship? I mean, we had all set responsibilities. And that's what we ought to be doing with the military. It makes you mad when I sit in Armed Services, I'm on the committee, and we have to talk about all this woke junk. And then you got Milley there, the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, want to talk about all the woke stuff and talk about the last president, give interviews about how the last president was, but doesn't want to talk about the new president. I mean, here's a guy who should have spent his time getting ready for the withdrawal from Afghanistan, but instead he spent his time giving interviews to people writing a book about Trump. It makes you mad.
Well, Senator Scott,
job.
Senator Scott, you are dead on. We only have about 15 seconds. Can you tell our audience, is this Build Back Baloney thing going to pass or not?
Not this year, and I hope never.
Oh!
I mean, it's terrible.
Senator Rick Scott of the great state of Florida, so much we could talk about. I just love having you on. You're so much fun. This is the Hugh Hewitt Radio Program. I'm guest host Kurt Schlichter. I want you to stick around. We got a lot more to come. Back again on the Hugh Hewitt Radio Program. I'm guest host Kurt Schlichter. That's Joey Ramone, backed up by the Ramones, full of conservatives. Johnny was a right winger. Now that's a little musical interlude here from Your talented guest host, your modest guest host, noted trial lawyer, senior columnist at Town Hall, retired Army Colonel Kurt Schlichter, author of the Kelly Turnbull series of conservative action novels. And now I'm going to bring up a guy who makes my prodigious book production pale in comparison. Andrew Klavan, author of a new novel. When Christmas Comes, it's a Yuletide mystery. You can get on Amazon. And it's your 36th book, isn't it, Andrew?
It is my 36th book, and it's good to talk to you, Kurt. I was really happy to be here until you started singing. But I'll try and recapture my enthusiasm.
Why are you trying to stifle my expression? Next, you're not going to use my preferred pronouns, which are His Majesty and Sire.
Right. I was going to say, I'm not sure your preferred pronouns can be said on the air, but that's okay.
Well, let's talk about When Christmas Comes, a Yuletide mystery, your new book just released. It involves an Army guy.
It does. It involves not just an Army guy, but an Army community, a community where people go when they retire from the military and and try to maintain some of the values that not only that they learned in the military, but that brought them into the military in the first place. And so it's a town that's almost exists out of time in a way, while the rest of the country is doing what it's doing. This little town kind of lives by another standard, and it's kind of an interesting journey into people trying to maintain what America is about.
How did you research this kind of military thing, Andrew Klavan? Because, you know, I'm a 27-year retired Army colonel. But I was active in reserve, so I kind of had my feet in both worlds. But they're very different worlds. How did you immerse yourself in it to be able to write When Christmas Comes?
Well, you know, when I was embedded in Afghanistan a few years back, only for a week or so. But before doing that, I was taken to Fort Bragg, and I was put through some training. I always joke that during the training, I was the package. You know, where when there was danger, they would throw me into the truck like a piece of cardboard. But I did get to see a lot of the military. I got to talk to a lot of military guys. Both at Fort Bragg and while I was overseas, and I really did kind of start to understand the way they look at things, and I found it very beautiful. I found it kind of separate from the rest of us who get into, you know, partisan arguments and our own kind of bad behavior, and they just have this feeling that they are doing a good thing, that they are the tip of the spear of a good thing, and the rest is up to the politicians and the people, and they're not going to worry about that. I really admired that. I admired that, and I tried to capture some of that attitude of duty and service and just discipline, I think, is the word that comes to mind, both in the men who are overseas, and I know there are women there too, but both in the men, but also in their wives, because I found military wives to be exceptional people and just almost a breed apart.
Well, you know my beautiful wife, who's an American by choice, and she waved goodbye to me with our six-month-old daughter when I deployed after 9/11 to Kosovo. My second my first deployment was to Desert Storm. My second deployment was a lot easier in the sense that no one was trying to shoot me, but I was gone for 16 months. Are you concerned, as I am, that the American people have in some ways become too separate from our military, that by professionalizing our military, much like the military was professionalized in ancient Rome, that it becomes a separate thing, not connected to the people.
Yes, I'm deeply concerned about this. I mean, I know that the military kind of prefers it that way when they have draftees. They always feel that these are amateurs kind of getting in the way. And I understand that a lot, but I think everybody should do a little bit of service, especially men should do a little bit of service in the military or something like, because it's a terrible thing both when people start to elevate the military too high. You know, you want to understand that the military can do bad things just like everybody else, and so you have to take care of them. They have to be civilian run. But it also is bad when the military starts to look at civilians as somehow separate from them and not the people who are supposed to be running the country. It's just a bad cultural thing, and we need to have more of a mix. I really, one of the things that I just despised during the wars on terror, as they were called, is I just despised Hollywood constantly portraying the military as victims. And I remember this ad campaign called We Have Your Six, where great citizens like Alec Baldwin would come on and say, we're backing you up by getting you psychiatric care. And I thought, you know, it's fine to get military people psychiatric care, but let's remember, these guys are heroes first. And, you know, when you talk about leaving your wife and saying goodbye for 16 months, I was, like I said, I was in Afghanistan for maybe about 2 weeks altogether. The minute I landed there, my first thought was anyone who does this, anyone who goes this far away from home is a hero, because it's heartbreaking. It was heartbreaking to me. You know, I just wanted to be back in my little bed. I wanted to be back with the people I knew right away. And I just think these are heroic guys, and we need to the people need to see that and they need to be part of it.
Well, your book, When Christmas Comes, A Yuletide Mystery, certainly does that. I think you hit on a number of interesting points there. And you're a cultural commentator, not just an author of, my gosh, 36 books. I'm about to write my 10th, right? I'm finishing up my 10th, and I thought I was a big deal. Then I met you. Now I feel bad about myself, so thanks for that.
But that which shouldn't prove your life, yeah.
But you... you know, you talked about the military and people's feelings towards it. In fact, one of the in my upcoming Regnery book, The Fall and Rise of America, one citation I have is to a poll where the military was at 70% approval in November of 2018, great approval, and it is now about 45%. And it is the leader in our institutions. In fact, the American people have been completely alienated and, frankly, disgusted by many of our institutions. How does a civilization survive when the people just simply have no respect for the institutions based on the institution's track record of corruption and failure?
Yeah, well, what's happened is we are suffering from a crisis of information. And the crisis of information is caused by the Internet, which is as big a change in human affairs as the invention of the printing press, which, let's not forget, brought on the Reformation, which is one of the biggest cracks in history. And this is doing kind of the same thing. We are flooded with information, and that has taken the narrative power away from the institutional left. And so that transformed the institutional left into a pack of liars. They just began to lie. They thought if they're not going to be able to control the narrative, if evildoers like Donald Trump are going to actually win elections, they are just going to lie and lie and lie until they get what they want, until they get the narrative back. They're going to cancel people. They're going to throw Hunter Biden, ban Hunter Biden's corruption from the Internet and from social media. When you do that, you don't actually control the narrative. What you do is you lose the people's trust. So then when you come to them and say, take the vaccine, people are totally justified in saying, why would I believe you? You lied about Russian collusion. You lied about the election. You lied about Hunter Biden's life. Why would I believe you? So now we have this issue where people are completely, as you say, alienated from their institutions, and no one knows what to believe. I started out doing my podcast at the Daily Wire, I guess it's like 7 years ago. At that point, I could kind of read the New York Times and the Washington and the Wall Street Journal and find out what the left and the right were thinking and then form my own opinions. Now it takes me five times as long just to make sure I have the facts right, because I don't trust anybody. And it's really hard to get the facts. So when that happens, people are on their own. And that's why you get this upsurge in conspiracy theories, this upsurge in distrust. And I have a hope I have a hope that it's going to smooth out. I have a hope that new institutions will form that will start to learn. I think that's happening already. I think the Daily Wire, where I work, is a great institution where we're trying to get more reporters to do more investigations. And once you have that, once you have people, information sources, then they start to hold public officials to account. Let's not forget that public officials are, if left alone, are going to become corrupt. They have to be policed by the press. Our press is utterly biased, utterly corrupt itself. We now have the blind leading the blind. That has got to change, and I'm hopeful it will change before we all kill one another, because I think it has to, and I think a new generation that comes up that's used to the Internet will understand how to use it maybe better than the generation in which the Internet was invented.
Well, Andrew Klavan, author of the new novel, When Christmas Comes, A Yuletide Mystery, I think I look at this, and I agree with you. Because I see, I see the left has adopted lying as a kind of an expedient, because it's not going to work in the long term. It's going to build up the distrust that you mentioned. I take the idea of vaccines. I had a vaccine. I also had the disease. I went. I talked to my doctors based on all the circumstances. I chose to have it, there have been so many changes, so many lies, and they never go back and say, hey, we were wrong. You know, it's the first pandemic in 100 years. I think the American people would have accepted, hey, well, you know, it's been 6 months. We found these new facts. We were giving you bad information, but now we're changing because of this. People would have gone, oh, okay. But they lied. We got about 15 seconds. Do you see a fuse on the ability to lie as a means of control?
Yeah, of course that's what they're doing, but I think they're going to lose in the end. Just as you say, they just lose the faith of the American people, and then they're done for. I think it's going to correct itself. I'm very hopeful about it.
Thank you very much, Andrew Klavan, author of When Christmas Comes, A Yuletide Mystery. Stick around here on the Hugh Hewitt Radio Program. Senator Jim Talent coming up next.
I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home, or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-888-1172.
Back on the Hugh Hewitt Radio Program with another Keeping Helping the Christmas Cheer. This one courtesy of my next guest's favorite rocker, Lemmy Kilmister of Motorhead, Senator Jim Talent. Senator Talent, welcome to the Hugh Hewitt Radio Program.
Thank you, Kurt. It's good to be on with you, although if you were referencing me, I assume you must mean your next guest, because I don't know who Lenny Kilmister is.
Not a Motorhead fan, huh?
No, I think it was after my time listening to popular music.
Well, Senator Talent, you're always one of the my favorite listens when you show up on the Hugh Hewitt Radio Program, because you're in a position where you were a distinguished senator, to the extent that's not a contradiction in terms, you are now free to say what needs to be said, and I'm going to throw down the gauntlet to you. I am very worried that the fine people of Missouri, a state I once resided in for a short, intense period in Parkville, may nominate Eric Greitens, and I think he puts that seat at risk. What do you say?
Well, if I had your quote in front of me, I'd just repeat it, although I'm not worried about the fine people of Missouri, and I don't say that just because I used to be a person who needed their votes. I have great confidence in their ability to choose an outstanding candidate, and we have a number of them running. If we were to choose former Governor Greitens, the campaign would be about, you know, what went on in his basement and his nonprofit, instead of about inflation and crime and the border, which is what we want it to be about. I mean, that's the big danger. Well, and I say to people, once in a while I talk to somebody about this, and they say, well, you know, he was treated you know, he's in the same position as President Trump. You know, he was treated unfairly, and I said, don't even mention him and Trump in the same sentence, because Trump fought it out, right? Trump stayed in his position and fought the issues out, and Governor Greitens, who had a chance to vindicate himself when he was governor, left. And Senate races are not vindication campaigns, you know, for individual personalities.
You are absolutely correct, Senator Talent. I am entirely unsentimental about politicians. To me, they are fungible, as we used to say in law school when we were discussing the Uniform Commercial Code. They are interchangeable. I don't care about Governor Greitens, the wrongs done to him, or whether he wants to vindicate itself. It is not on my list of concerns. My only concern is winning that Senate seat. He is damaged goods, and I think he should take one for the team. He was famously within the SEAL community. He should pull out because he is not the best for the job. And that's my view of it. What do you think?
Well, see, I look at politicians the same way, only what I say is I don't take them personally. I take them transactionally. In other words,
bingo.
There's a job to be done here, and I think that's the right moral position, by the way. Now, I should always add, you know, voters, one of the great things about our system is that voters get to pick what they think is important and vote based on what they think is important. But I think if you love your neighbor, you should want them to be well-governed. So you should, within the very broadest limits, pick the person that you think is going to govern them the best. Okay?
Radical notion. Yeah, yeah. You might be an insurrectionist saying things like that.
That's how I approach it. And so if you say, well, I like the cut of that person's jib or whatever, you know, in the first place, you don't know these people. I mean, I've been in politics my whole life, and I've made, I hope, a fair number of good friends. But you don't really know the personalities. You know, you don't know how good a husband or wife or neighbor they are or the rest of it. You can ascertain whether they're going to follow policies that are good for the country and whether they're the kind of person who will be effective in carrying them out. And that's exactly my approach. And I think that probably comes from your service. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, there's a mission to be done, and that has to be put ahead of everything else.
I think you're so right, Senator Talent. Let's move into the military realm. Right now, Admiral Christopher Grady is his nomination's being considered for vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And he mentioned that he thinks gender advisors in the Navy are a great idea. This coming after the revelation that the crew of the Bonhomme Richard was absolutely untrained to fight fires on a ship, something very important when you're loaded with ammo and jet fuel. Do you believe any Republican is going to vote to support this guy and this kind of failed mindset that's going to get some of our sailors and soldiers, airmen, Marines, whatever, killed?
Yeah, spoken like a veteran. I don't know how people are going to vote, Kurt. I do know that the military is one of the best, if not the best example of being able to integrate people from different backgrounds and sexes into a common mission. And they do it by de-emphasizing the things that we should not emphasize and by emphasizing the importance of the mission. And everybody dedicating themselves to the mission and to the organization of which they're a part.
So true, Senator Talent. Thank you very much. And thank you for your support of Lemmy Kilmister and Motorhead. This is the Hugh Hewitt Radio Program. Stick around. We got Representative Mike Garcia coming up top of the hour.
Kurt.
Well, thank you, Hugh Hewitt, for that grotesque slander of my character and discernment. I am Kurt Schlichter. I am a noted Los Angeles trial lawyer. I am a retired United States Army colonel. I am the senior columnist at townhall.com. You should go and read my column today. It's about inflation. I'm sure we'll be talking about that and many other things with our next guest, Nancy Pelosi's number one target in the House of Representatives. From California, Mike Garcia. Congressman Garcia, welcome to the Hugh Hewitt Radio Program.
Hey, good morning, Kurt. Thanks for having me. Hey, what a great Army Navy game this past weekend, huh?
Yeah, now, of course, you are famously a Navy aviator. You have made a grave error in mistaking a graduate of the Army Officer Candidate School for someone who gives a damn about the Army Navy game.
All right, well played. I'll give you that.
I am more concerned with what the Bulwark is going to write about my my guest host hosting today, or Media Matters. Hi, Elmo, or whatever the hell the name of the guy listening to me is. Congressman Garcia, you are the number one target, and they're trying to redistrict you into oblivion. What's going on in your district?
Yeah, and as you know, like you said, Nancy came after me hard in the last cycle. She spent between $20 and $25 million coming after the California's 25th congressional district I was running in unsuccessfully, and so now they're redistricting, and it's getting a little tougher. My district's getting even a little more blue, and you know, they're going to make it a little tougher fight for us. We will still prevail. We've still got great support here in the district. We're doing great things for our constituents and for the nation, and that's being recognized by the voters. So we'll be okay. Nancy's not going to give up. She's going to keep coming after us, and we've got a fantastic campaign already in place. You know, 400 or 500 volunteers out there, and we're raising good money. But we can always use the support, obviously. And Nancy took this race very personally. This was Katie Hill's seat. She was seen as as her prodigal son, or daughter, I should say, or whatever she chose to be.
Well, I hear with her resume, she'd fit right in at CNN.
Most likely, yeah. She said, I think she still is looking for a job, so that'd be a good fit for her.
Well, Congressman Garcia, how can we help you out?
Well, the financial support is always needed. ElectMikeGarcia.com is the website. You can donate money there and help us in the primary coming up. And the bigger fight is going to be in November with the general election. We've got 6 Dems running against us. So it's the L.A. media market. It's not cheap. And I'm one of the few conservatives actually in the L.A. area representing. So we've got to hold this seat. We do view this as Gettysburg for us. I've seen that. I've made that metaphor since the beginning, and it's an expensive race, obviously. So the financial support is really desired. ElectMikeGarcia.com. And we've got a great grassroots campaign going.
Well, the Democrats lost at Gettysburg after burning down the Schlichter homestead in Chambersburg, right down the turnpike. Let's hope that Pickett's charge fails once again. What are the folks in your district, the California 25th, which is kind of the North Valley area of Los Angeles, if you're familiar with our fine Southern California metro area, what are the folks talking about?
It's about security, frankly. You know, and in California, it's about survival and just being able to stay in this beautiful state. Our state right now is the result of a single-party system in California that has run our economy into the ground. It's overtaxed, overregulated, and made our lives as tough as possible. So for the average taxpayer, the small business owner, the residents, it's about continuing to survive. It's about security. I've been blessed with opponents who support the defund movement, defund the police movement, who have marched with BLM and bent the knee. And the average voter is tired of that nonsense. They realize the fallacy of these movements and the fact that it's compromising the integrity of our security in our neighborhoods and at the national security level. And they just want someone who's going to do the right thing and put party politics aside. So it's not about Republicans versus Democrats. This isn't about left versus right. It's about security, investing in our neighborhoods, and supporting law enforcement. And in California, being able to continue to survive in California without having to move to Texas or Idaho.
Well, I understand that, Representative Mike Garcia. I'm also a resident of Los Angeles County. I live in Ted Lieu's district. I went to a local Carl's Jr. last night. I bought some cheeseburgers for myself and my family, 3 of them, and it cost me $30. Are your people talking about inflation?
Unreal. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, between the gas, the cost of living, and the housing, and then everyday items now like cheeseburgers and bacon and groceries. This is unsustainable, and this is a product of not only the supply chain issues, but the liquidity and cash on the streets right now. This is a product of the far left progressive policies and programs that are put in place that are the leading edges of socialism, which are effectively putting so much cash on the streets that we are seeing these prices now skyrocket as a result. And I think there's something like four times the amount of currency in circulation through our Fed this year than there was 18 months ago. And that's why we're seeing this inflation the way we are. It's not just the supply chain challenges on the supply side. It's also the demand side and the amount of currency in circulation. It's a direct result of all these large, massive programs that the left is pushing in order to buy votes. And it's going to backfire in the form of unsustainable inflation and driving middle-class families into the dirt economically.
Well, Representative Mike Garcia, when you're back in Washington, D.C., in the midst of the swamp, you're surrounded by Democrat colleagues. How do they explain this to themselves? Are they reflecting, saying, gosh, maybe this inflation stuff's really bad and we ought to stop? How do they rationalize what they're doing? Because it seems to be driving their poll numbers down to the bottom of the cesspool.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is, Kurt, they don't fear conservatives. They don't fear running against Republicans. 80% of them fear the far left within their own party. This is why Nancy Pelosi behaves the way she does. She fears the AOCs and the Omars of the world. And at the local levels, these representatives fear the far left coming in and primarying them. So they don't worry about the general election because their districts are so blue. They worry about the primary. And when you've got that mindset, what you're concerned about is not shifting far enough left in this year and then in the first few months of 2022. And inciting someone to come run against you in a primary. So that's why they've adopted these policies and this mindset of supporting these things. They know they're wrong. They're losing sleep over it at night. It goes against most of their principles. But they're politicians, and they want to stay in office. They don't care at what price that comes, and that's the problem. That is literally the focus of the challenges that we have in D.C. right now.
Well, from the outside, we look at the Congress, Representative Mike Garcia, and it looks like it's a very angry place under Nancy Pelosi. What's your relationship, if any, with your Democrat colleagues? Do you get along well? Do you just ignore each other? How does that work for you as human beings?
Well, you know, I didn't go there to make friends. I certainly am not trying to, you know, be social with any of these folks, frankly, on either side of the aisle. I'm there to defend the Constitution and try to fix making sure that our nation doesn't turn into what California became. But I do put a smile on when I see these guys. And that's, I think, the best thing that we can do. These progressives and many of these Dems are unhappy people. They realize they're going to be losing the majority here in the next cycle. So when I see them, I give them a little smile, a little wink, let them know that we're there, we're fighting. I don't envy their position. They're going to be losing a lot of their seats, and it drives them nuts when they see us being so happy and continuing to fight. And we are getting victories in the background and in many of these pieces of legislation. The NDAA, I think, was a great example of good conservatives pushing until the NDAA was correct. So the writing's on the wall. They're showing weaknesses in the seams, and they know they're going to be losing the majority. So we can drive them a little crazy in the meantime and do everything that we can until we get the majority back.
Well, Representative Mike Garcia, we only have about 30 seconds left. When the Republicans take back the House, which I think they're going to do, are they going to exact a penalty for the breaking of norms that we've seen, including stripping Republicans of their committee assignments or denying them the ability to be on the kangaroo court committee with Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, who I have, frankly, no use for? Are we going to get some payback?
Yeah, I think they should. It'll be case by case. It'll be done correctly with justification, substantiation, but there's got to be a reckoning here for sure.
Oh, Mike Garcia, that's music to my ears. This is the Hugh Hewitt Radio Program. I'm guest host Kurt Schlichter. Stick around. We got a lot more to come. This is Kurt Schlichter, guest hosting on the Hugh Hewitt Radio Program with gender non-binary 80s rocker Twisted Sister presenting a Christmas tunage. I'm not sure what to make of that, but there we are. You know me. I am the senior columnist at Town Hall, retired Army colonel, noted trial lawyer, author of the Kelly Turnbull series of conservative action novels. Check out my new Town Hall column. It is pinned on my Twitter account, at Kurt Schlichter. It is called Inflation Devastation for the Democrats. It's going to be devastation next year for the Democrats. And one of the guys who's going to be a part of the devastation is a personal friend of mine. I worked with him as a lawyer defending election integrity after the last election in Las Vegas. It's Senate candidate Adam Laxalt. Adam, how are you?
I'm doing great. Good morning.
Good morning. You know, Adam, let's be frank. A lot of people until recently wrote off Nevada and its Senate seat as one that Republicans were going to be able to snatch. But you've gone in and the polls say you're going to take it. What do you think of that?
Well, look, I think everybody watches Nevada in the last couple presidentials and everybody's hoping for a turn. And unfortunately, it's gone blue the last two cycles. But the thing is that the state is as absolutely close as possibly can be. President Trump lost by 2 points in 2020, and it was roughly the same in 2016. So when people think it's Nevada may be a blue state, I mean, it is a sliver blue state. 2014, when I was elected attorney general, Republicans won everything. And so we have a great, great opportunity in what certainly looks to be a red year to flip this state. And I could just tell you, being out and across the state every single day now that I'm in this campaign, that something is very, very different. People are absolutely apoplectic about what is going on in our country. You can feel it. You can hear it. You can see it. And people are demanding change, and 2022 is going to be that cycle. And we certainly plan on exposing Senator Masto, our current senator's record.
Is that her name?
Our voters want to change.
You never hear from this woman. Or it is a woman, right? Who is this person?
Well, Senator Harry Reid picked her to be his replacement. And, you know, it's funny because she actually ran the Democrat senatorial arm. So she's responsible for giving us this Democrat majority that we're living under right now. But as you say, still, you know, just doesn't really carry a big profile. Certainly doesn't have any major accomplishments to run on in our state. I ask that of every room. And you're throwing it out to your listeners. I mean, who has heard of Senator Cortez Masto? Yet, she is a reliable, consistent vote for the left. She votes with Chuck Schumer 98% of the time, Bernie Sanders 95% of the time. And so we certainly plan on letting the voters know that.
You know, Adam Laxalt, like I mentioned at the top of the segment, you and I were in Las Vegas lawyering for election integrity. A lot of people are very, very worried about election integrity. A lot of people are worried that Republicans can't prevail. What are we doing in Nevada to ensure a fair election in 2022?
Well, there's no question this is still top of the mind for Nevada voters, and a majority of the voters in our state believe that the election was not fair. And, you know, you would hope that the Democrats would have gone in and at least done a few things to shore up the public after 2020. And instead, they went in and gave us the exact same election style, the California-style election, universal mail-out balloting, ballot harvesting, drop boxes, you name it, the works. We have no voter ID. We still have unclean voter rolls. So it's a pretty ugly picture. The only good news is that people now understand we have to do this right. We have to pay attention. And Virginia found at least one thing to do that's incredibly important. That is make sure your people sign up as poll watchers so that you have our own people, which we're supposed to, Republicans are supposed to have half those seats, watching those signatures, watching that verification process. So at a minimum, we need to push for that. But we as a campaign need to work with some of the other groups and come up with the multi-step plan to do our best to make sure this is a safe election.
Adam Laxalt running for Senate in Nevada. One thing that's very, very interesting about this cycle, and it's personal to me because my wife is a Cuban immigrant, an American by choice, and I've gotten to know her family, all immigrants, is that Latinx, whatever the hell that is, voters, Hispanic voters, have made a remarkable movement towards the Republicans. They were supposed to be loyal Democrats, but I guess they're just not obeying the liberals and voting the way they're quote unquote supposed to. What have you seen about this remarkable change?
Well, I guess when you decide that you're going to change the name of a group unilaterally and continue to bash them over the head with Latinx when clearly Latino people are not interested in having their name changed, there's at least a telltale sign of why they may be losing this constituency. But, you know, seriously, the bottom line is that the Democratic Party simply doesn't represent the American dream anymore. They still have some legacy on that. They still talk that way. But the reality is their policies are not for the working class. Their policies hurt the working class. Their policies in my state, for example, resulted in over 50% of small businesses being shut down during COVID, a procedure that was not necessary. It was not the right way to deal with COVID. They also have kids that weren't able to be in school. You know, all of these things are stacking up as people look around. They're like, you know, I kind of remember how good things were just a year or two ago when Nevada's unemployment is all-time lows, the economy was soaring, people had opportunity, people moved to Vegas in droves for that opportunity, and right now we're 50th out of 50 in unemployment. And so people look around and they can see, wow, so this is what America looks like and this is what Nevada looks like under Democrat leadership. No thanks. We're going to pass.
Adam Laxalt, of course, inflation is on everybody's mind. What are your folks in Nevada telling you about how inflation is impacting their lives?
You know, I distinctly remember a few months ago when people started warning of inflation, and the president and the spokeswoman, Jen Psaki, and all of the quote-unquote experts kept telling us it's transitory, it's transitory, it's transitory. And I can just tell you, on the ground, boy, did it feel like it was something that was going to really hurt people and really stick around for a long time. It seems like that verdict is in, that we are in for a long haul of major inflation. And, you know, unfortunately, we're in grave trouble. You know, this is really hits our state hard, and it especially hits the Las Vegas Valley that you were talking about and some of these communities and constituencies that the Democrats feel like they own and that they're entitled to have supporting them. When you support massive spending and you support the Green New Deal type policies, lo and behold, it's going to lead to increased prices and it's going to make things more expensive. But what do our current leaders do? They just get up in front of the public and say, well, if gas is too expensive, people just need to go out and buy an electric vehicle. That's what Pete Buttigieg said last week. And they're so out of touch. It is just astonishing. And that's why I think we're in for a major change election.
Well, Adam Laxalt, you were a member of the United States Navy. Your roommate at Navy school was, in fact, a certain governor of Florida. And, of course, the Navy is a very important supporting arm for the United States Army, which is the decisive branch of military victory for the United States.
Navy, beat Army.
Hey, I'm OCS. West Point's all on its own, buddy. Here's the thing. A lot of Republicans particularly ones who weren't in the military, are still enamored of generals and admirals. Right now, we got an admiral being vetted by the Armed Services Committee to be vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He expressed how important it was to have gender advisors at the same time that within his Navy, one of our major ships, the Bonhomme Richard, had to be decommissioned because its sailors couldn't put out a damn fire on it because they weren't trained in firefighting. What are you going to do once you are in the Senate, and we only have about 30 seconds, to ensure that our military starts getting serious and to put these flag officers against the wall so that they can either conform or be cast out?
There is no better platform than the Senate to hold hearings, to draw attention to this woke infection of our military. It is dangerous. It is something that the American public absolutely would not support if we're simply able to make the case and make sure people understand it makes us less safe.
Guys, get online. Go to Adam Laxalt's website. Help him out. He's got my support. He sounds like he's a great guy. I worked with him. I know. This is the Hugh Hewitt Radio Program. I'm Kurt Schlichter. We'll be right back.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.